Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
African swine fever is not a threat to human health. It is a deadly swine disease, highly contagious and deadly. It's a viral disease that affects both domestic as well as feral swine of all ages. So it has recently spread through China and Asia as well as within parts of the European Union. And then most recently, African swine fever was confirmed in pigs in Dominican Republic and Haiti.
Just one reason USDA wants to stop food smuggling. Jenny Moffitt, Undersecretary, Marketing and Regulatory Programs.
And would have significant impact on U.S. pork producers, their communities, export markets, if it was discovered in the United States. Fortunately, African swine fever has never been found in the United States, and all of us at USDA want to make sure that we keep it that way.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Try to be flexible. We're pretty sure the revenue side of things is going to be better. So, you know, keep an eye on costs, manage costs, higher feed costs, input costs in general. That'll be our challenge, one of our bigger challenges this year.
That's Dr. Daryl Peel, Oklahoma State University Livestock Marketing Specialist, says 2022 is in a very good place as far as the market goes, and actually says we spent a lot of 2021 getting all of the ducks in a row, but now that they're there, we're in a pretty good place to begin the year. Of course, there is a good amount of optimism for prices as well. As Bill mentions, prices around 10% higher for the year compared to last year, if not higher, for some classes of cattle. Again, the question he says is not whether prices will be higher, but rather how much higher as we go throughout the year. Well, producers have until March 15th to make or change elections and enroll in the agriculture risk coverage and price loss coverage programs. That's ARC and PLC through the Farm Service Agency. ARC program provides income support tied to historical base acres, not current production of covered commodities. Payments are issued when the actual county crop revenue of a covered commodity is less than the county guarantee for the covered commodity. For PLC, program payments issued when the effective price of a covered commodity is less than the reference price for that commodity. The effective price equals either the market year average price or the national average loan rate for the covered commodity, whichever is higher. There are a couple of online tools to help producers make their election for the 2022 growing season, one from the Agricultural and Food Policy Center at Texas A&M, and another from the National Coalition for Producer Education, led by the University of Illinois. Well, some corn producers have a 33% increase in prices for their crop, but that increase in inputs dwarfs the general run-up in commodity prices. Steve Ons, a producer from Moore County, Texas, former president of the National Corn Growers Association, he explains for his operation, he's actually looking at a 264% increase in nitrogen fertilizer cost and a 241% increase in all fertilizer inputs since 2020. Says the trajectory isn't good, and it has both producers and bankers concerned. He says they're borrowing money to pay for the inputs, and then if they lose that crop to hell, drought, or late freeze, they'll have huge bills that have to be paid next fall. Even if everything goes well and a farmer harvests a bumper crop, another black swan event in the markets could lead to a major reduction in prices that would set up the entire industry for disaster this year. He warns that's what's got everyone concerned. Well, for the past 30 years, National Biodiesel Board has advocated for a renewable clean-burning diesel replacement that is reducing U.S. dependence on imported diesel, creating green jobs, and improving the environment. And though that message will remain the same moving forward, on Tuesday during the opening general session of the group's conference and expo, NBB CEO Donnell Rehagen unveiled a new name and a new brand for the industry's future, now known as the Clean Fuels Alliance America. It's Agriculture Today.
The Cattle Industry Convention and NCBA Trade Show is the oldest and largest event in the beef cattle industry, and we're headed to Houston, February 1st through the 3rd. Everything's bigger in Texas, so you can't afford to miss the massive NCBA Trade Show. Engaging speakers, outstanding education, all for the beef cattle industry. We've gone to Texas for CattleCon 2022, February 1st through the 3rd. Visit convention.ncba.org for more.
Every drop counts. Introducing the Patriot 50 Series Sprayer from Case IH that puts every drop of product exactly where you want it. Enhanced LED lights, a cab designed for all-day comfort, and more precise spraying technology. Because just like you, we know every drop counts. Visit your local Wiley implement for details on the new Patriot 50 Series Sprayer.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
This is Agriculture Today.
AEM is the Association of Equipment Manufacturers.
Kurt Blades is Senior Vice President of Industry Sectors and Product Leadership with AEM.
We represent off-road equipment in five sectors: ag, construction, forestry, mining, and utility. And in representing those industries, we do a lot of work, you know, in Washington, D.C. and around the state capitals, as well as in Canada and the individual provinces, as well in Ottawa, around advocacy and regulatory work. But we also, you know, put our members together to talk about things like standards and making sure that the equipment is safe to operate, that it is interoperable, and that we've got a good workforce. And as it relates to what we're going to be talking about here, we provide a nice place to collect market intelligence and market data that we make available certainly to our members to help in their businesses. Well, we also like to make available to the public to give a pretty good indication of what the equipment market and the ag market in general look like.
Admits that 2021 was a really good year.
Oh, I think all of our members at AEM, whether it's the largest multinational companies or the small short line manufacturers, would all say that 2021 was a solid year for ag equipment. It wasn't without its challenges, but it was a solid year kind of across the board. And that's largely because the ag market has been pretty solid across the board. Farmers have had a lot of optimism. They've made a lot of money and they've done okay. But also when you think about capital equipment, you know, a lot of tractors are used on farms, but there's also a lot of tractors that are used, to take care of properties. And with a lot of goods during the pandemic that have been focused on the home, those markets have been really strong during the pandemic, where maybe someone had some disposable income that they instead chose to maybe invest in a new tractor rather than a trip to Europe. And so the market's been able to take advantage of that over the last, really the last 18 months. Now, the downside of that is the demand has been strong, and you can't open up any newscast or newspaper and not hear about the supply chain challenges, and they're very real. So when you couple strong demand across the board with the supply chain challenges that are very well known, you're going to have some availability issues that I think probably many of your listeners have seen as they've driven past dealer lots or even tried to purchase a new piece of equipment.
And really, through the pandemic, it was those smaller utility tractors that led the charge.
In December 2019, when we were looking at the year-end numbers for December 2019, we sold a grand total of 163,000 tractors under 40 horsepower. At the end of 2021 in December, we sold 215,000 of that same class of tractors. So clearly there's a lot more tractors in that market. And I think you could say, well, are we going to satisfy the market? Is it being satisfied? I think the answer is it's starting to be satisfied, but I think also you know, our society's changed a little bit. People sort of recognizing that they sort of enjoy being home sometimes. And so I think it's going to continue to be a strong market like it has been for some time. But what I really get excited about when we talk about tractor sales is what has been growing with the larger tractors. What started as being a growth cycle for the small tractors, well, you start to see those ag tractors also looking pretty strong. That's a pretty good indication of farmer sentiment and people feeling good about where the economy is going to go.
It's Agriculture Today.
Take the guesswork out of preparing your cotton for harvest with NanoPro. Utilizing NanoPro's revolutionary nanoliquid technology, your harvest aids go to work faster and more efficiently, increasing leaf drop, reducing regrowth, and helping your cotton be ready when you are. Offering a 3-to-1 return on investment, you can't go wrong with NanoPro. Learn more or find your nearest dealer by calling Tracy Carrillo at 575-639-5110 or visit aquayield.com.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turn roads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
One of the things we've been doing for about the last 3 years is we put cameras on some module handlers in the field, in the gin yard, and at the module feeder to really see where some of these modules are being damaged and what are some of the most common occurrences.
Dr. Ed Barnes is Senior Director of Agricultural and Environmental Research with Cotton Incorporated, talking contamination.
And so this has been a collaborative effort. You can see listed there Jason Ward at NC State, Bobby Harden at Texas A&M, and John Monure at the Lubbock Gin Lab. And so we've summarized some of those findings that you will you can find in a report on cotton cultivated. If you go there and just search harvest, it'll be one of the reports that comes up. But what we've seen are things that you'd expect. You know, we've seen damage from module trucks, from the chains not being synchronized, from poor alignment in the field and the sidewalls hitting the modules. Also, when we see, you know, people using loaders, sometimes when they back the forklift up, they turn too soon and clip the edge. So there are some, and not picking them up high enough when they set them on the flatbed and causing some tears there. So there's, you know, we really want to encourage people to be careful in handling these modules all the way from the field to the gin.
He talks about the importance of standards.
A real group effort to try to come up with a set of laboratory tests and field tests that define what is an appropriate module cover performance. And so we think this is we just finished this up. It's been through past the first round of voting. There's some formal steps. This will not only be an ASABE, but it'll also be an ANSI standard. So there's a couple more steps in the formal standards process. But essentially, this is now an approved standard. And it's, I know that the National Cotton Council and National Cotton Genders are thinking about, you know, how we're going to implement this. But I think one of the ideas right now is that the council will keep a list of approved wraps and manufacturers. But I think it's just going to be real important in the future that if you don't use if there's some competition to the Tamarap that it meets the standard, you won't want to use it otherwise.
And then there's drones.
There's been a small project by the USDA ARS Gin Lab in Stoneville, Mississippi, where they've been using these to scout for plastic in the field. And they're just trying to optimize, you know, what's the highest you can fly the UAV and still be able to detect the plastic. And there's really two reasons we're doing this as a research project to really look at where is plastics most frequently going to occur so that we could advise you. And I think many of you already know this, you know, it's going to be near highways, near population centers. Probably the field on the back 40 is not worried about that. But what I do envision in the future is, you know, you can see this robot or this UAV on the right has claws on it, and that's commercially out there. If you have someone that's providing a service for scouting with UAVs during the growing season, this might be an added service they could provide at the time of defoliation for those fields where you know you could have a plastic problem. I know I've talked to some of our board members before about, you know, looking for plastic, and some of you have told me, you know, there's just three of us and we got 2,000 acres or whatever. I don't have time to chase plastic bags. And so this might be a way to chase those bags.
It's Agriculture Today.
For years, Texas cotton growers have had a trusted partner when it comes to choosing their varieties. Next Gen brand cottonseed from AmeriCotton. Next Gen varieties bred specifically for West Texas growers have performed year after year, even in harsh conditions. And for this year's season, there are several new Bolgard 3 Extend Flex varieties available. Contact your local Next Gen representative or dealer today to learn more about varieties suited for your needs. Next Gen, your West Texas partner for performance cottonseed.
Ring in the new year with savings at South Plains Implement. Looking for a new ride? Get great deals and financing options across a wide selection of John Deere lawn equipment during the Winter Green Sales event. Have time to tackle repairs on harvest equipment? In-stock peanut and cotton harvest equipment parts 15% off. Ready to plow into planting season? South Plains Implement offering 15% off complete sets of tillage parts. Some restrictions apply. Offers end January 31st at South Plains Implement, where farm meets family.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
This plant closing really plays into where we find ourselves today, because this was the last of several plant closures that brought the overall size of the beef packing industry down. That's a long-term story we can talk about.
It was 9 years ago this week when Cargill announced the closing of a Plainview, Texas beef packing plant. Dr. Daryl Peel is Oklahoma State University Livestock Marketing Specialist.
And then, of course, just to kind of jump ahead, Cargill closed this plant in 2013. 2014 wound up to be the lowest point of the cattle numbers coming out of the drought and so on in 2011, 2012, and 2013. And the industry began to see the first major herd expansion that had happened in about 25 years. And so as the cattle numbers came up, we actually reached a point where we estimate that for the first time in about 40 years, we actually didn't have enough beef packing capacity. We had excess capacity for many years. But around 2016, we sort of flipped and got into a situation where packing capacity was on average a little bit short, and that meant we had to do a lot more things to sort of manage through the numbers of cattle we were producing. And that's very much part of the story that we've been through the last couple of years with the pandemic and where we find ourselves today with the latest round of impacts in terms of labor issues on top of that reduced the packing capacity in the industry.
So where were packers 9 years ago?
Again, the story goes back about 40 years, because most of our major packing industry and infrastructure that we still have today was built in the 70s and early 80s. And so we haven't built a new mainline processing plant in a long time. And in fact, at the time those were built 40-ish years ago, we had about 15 to 20 million more head of cattle in this country than we do today. And those numbers were coming down, and they continued to come down. And so again, the industry operated in an era of excess capacity for many years, and the handwriting was on the wall, certainly as we got into the 2000s, that not all of those plants could stay in the industry. And then, of course, when we got into the really sharp drop in animal numbers in 2011, 12, and 13 because of the drought, that really became acute, and everybody knew that the plants needed to leave the industry, but of course, everybody wanted to sort of hold out as long as they could and see who blinks first. And it turned out that Cargill, because they had two plants only, 30 miles apart in the Texas Panhandle, was in the most vulnerable position to not be able to service those plants, and really was the first one that had to make the choice to sacrifice one of those plants in order to have any chance to get through those low cattle numbers with the other plant. And so that was kind of the last plant closure. There had been a couple before that that sort of set the stage with the overall capacity that we find ourselves with today.
But as drought returns to the region, it's hard to forget lessons learned.
The Southern Plains kind of flirted with the drought last year. It was more pronounced farther west in the southwest, and then generally in the western U.S. in the Intermountain regions as well. But now it's kind of reestablished a bit more into the Southern Plains. The La Nina weather pattern that we're in right now suggests that could be more of an issue. So, yes, it's very much on our minds that we could be facing some additional drought pressures. It's always nerve-wracking to have such widespread drought conditions across the U.S. at this time of the year going into a growing season here in the next 3-4 months. So we clearly are very vulnerable and could face a lot of critical decisions in various regions depending on how things develop here as we get into the spring growing season.
It's Agriculture Today.
The formula for success is a simple one. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why cotton growers looking to improve yield potential plant Delta Pine brand cotton, featuring 100 years of proven yield potential and exclusive genetics in every bag. Strong is a legacy all its own. Protect yours with strong cotton from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
What can you get for 2 cents these days? How about new, more efficient wheat varieties? Better market access for Texas wheat producers and increased demand to your product. Each year, the Texas Wheat Producers Board achieves these goals by investing producer contributions to promote wheat through research, education, and market development. Who knew 2 cents could be so valuable? A message from the Texas Wheat Producers Board.
This is Agriculture Today.
The study that we released this morning points out from the Ag and Food Policy Center, you know, our input costs are based on basically what our commodities are bringing. And so latest follow-up, and in this case, they're actually exceeding, you know, what we've gained in commodity prices.
Dee Vaughn is a Texas Panhandle farmer. He's a former president for the National Corn Growers Association.
That is somewhat of a black swan. COVID is a black swan that nobody foresaw 5 years ago. And it's obviously having some effect on our commodity prices. There is demand overseas for corn, for all food products and stuff. But we know that the corn price is only going to be here for a little while, and then it's going to decline fairly quickly. The fertilizer prices, on the other hand, have a tendency to linger on and even stay higher than they were in the past. So it's a continuing thing with our input costs. And that's what really usually gets us in a jam is when the commodity prices fall and we're still paying high input costs. The tariff situation, that's just adds insult to injury. What we had a year ago is Mosaic, which controls 85% of the phosphate market in the United States at the wholesale level, applied for tariffs on phosphate rock coming out of Russia and out of Morocco, and they were able to get it, and we saw an immediate increase in the price of phosphate. And that just adds on to, you know, the price increases that they were already applying to the farmer. And then right now we have CF Industries, which controls about 60% of the U.S. nitrogen market, and has applied for tariffs to be applied to Russian and nitrogen that comes out of the island countries of Trinidad and Tobago. They are major exporters to the United States. And they've applied for tariffs to be put on that nitrogen coming in from those countries. And that will, again, like I say, that just adds insult to injury. We've already had these great big, huge increases in prices, 264% on nitrogen at my farm level in the last 2 years. And the study that Dr. Joe Outlaw did down at Texas A&M and the research he's done shows that these tariffs, if they're applied, are going to add another $102 per ton for nitrogen fertilizer.
And he's focused on what a tariff on imported fertilizer might do, but what are the solutions?
Texas Corn Producers Board, on behalf of Texas corn producers, statewide, and we went with state associations with 20 other states. We petitioned Dr. Joe Outlaw down at the Ag and Food Policy Center to commission a study to study the nitrogen industry, the nitrogen producing industry, and their pricing methods. And what he came back with is, you know, the correlation is very much that they have market power to set prices wherever they want those prices to be for fertilizer. And so we are hoping that this study, with the publicity that it gains, and that study can be used with our members of Congress and our senators and with the administration, and make the case that, one, these tariffs don't need to be applied. They do not need to be granted. We need to roll back the tariffs that are already in place that were put on a year ago. Plus, we hope that by just publicizing these exorbitant prices, that it will encourage those companies to roll back the prices somewhat. So we're hopeful that maybe we get some immediate relief if the companies will back off a little bit on their pricing, but especially not apply any new tariffs, which actually add on, like I say, insult to injury.
It's Agriculture Today.
On the phone with Joe Guzman, Director of Sales for Equinom Smarter Sesame. Joe, 2022's here. You have lots of opportunities in sesame.
That's right, Stephen. We have grain handlers with 2022 agreements ready to be signed. Smarter Sesame makes a great rotational crop for producers who are planning for the new crop and season. With inputs on the rise, Smarter Sesame is a great choice for low input acres.
Joe, if somebody wants to find out more, how can they do that?
They can call 1-833-SESAME or visit equinom.com.
If you don't push yourself, how will you know what you're really made of? Cotton Research and Promotion Program works to develop innovative performance technologies that redefine cotton's capabilities and helps athletes push themselves further. Cotton Incorporated is working hard to educate consumers about cotton's versatility, especially in the athletic apparel market. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
And I think that just follows the pattern that we've seen so far, where, again, on the one hand, we're saying worldwide things are tightening up, but in the U.S., we saw the USDA drop the projection basically from 840 million bushels for this current marketing year down to 825.
It's Dr. Dan O'Brien, Kansas State grain marketing economist.
Still not just terrible, not below 700 million bushels, but in our better years when we're really going well, we're close to a billion bushels, 1.1, 1.2. And I think it's a high price phenomena largely. And if problems develop around the world, then yes, here's the U.S. as a residual supplier of last resort. They have to ship with higher costs to get it out of the U.S. off to these other markets in the Middle East and whatever. But still, our supplies are there. So we'll see where all that goes. It's probably a bigger question, a bigger issue in terms of domestic millers and where they can get the quality of crop that they need. I would also add in for soybeans that USDA did drop Argentine soybean production by 3 million metric tons down to 46.5 and Brazilian by 5 million metric tons down to 139. And really, that's the big news in this report is the adjustments that because of dry conditions we've had in South America. So they made those changes. And then, oh, yes, almost the same way they did for wheat. Then, yes, by the way, we did drop U.S. soybean exports by 215 million. Excuse me. They didn't change the export number, but we are down year over year by 215 million. So it's a conundrum of a deal. And you stand back and look at this, Eric, and we see all those numbers. But so at the same time, we see the USDA being judicious and lowering U.S. export numbers for these major crops. But the places that would be supplying these grains and oil seeds otherwise, well, they're struggling. So it really opens up the opportunity for some catch-up, panicky buying later on if the problems that we're seeing right now in the world are exacerbated, particularly in South America or Ukraine, you name it, and the world has to come calling. So quite a thing to have happening. At the same time, we've got fertilizer issues and other inflation issues going on for crop production here in the United States. And it just is really setting us up, I think, for a really roiling, volatile March, April, May, June as we start getting out in the field, try to get fertilizer at a reasonable price, try to get crops going. And, oh, yeah, by the way, overseas, they might be short of having adequate supplies to supply world needs. And whatever stocks we have left, then, we could see callers come looking for those.
But he admits volatility is expected throughout the year.
Nobody knows exactly what's going to happen in terms of these markets. And we've got risks and heightened risks really this year. And add into that a political election, even though it's just a midterm, whatever moves leading into that could affect the economy. Let's hope we don't see price controls or something like that get thrown out. That would really roil the world. We can at least try to be informed and set reference prices and some type of a logical plan. On the one hand, if we see prices move to the high side, well, yeah, let's sequentially market into that. But if we don't, then what can we do to just not be a victim to prices going to the lower side? That might be a basis contract. That might be an option of some type, et cetera. So what we're trying to do in that is help people have logical, constructive, thought out plans to deal with the uncertainty in the market, particularly as we come through these spring and early summer planting and crop development seasons.
It's Agriculture Today.
Your grandpa, his dad, and your dad all grew up working the land. You too want to follow in their footsteps. Capital Farm Credit wants to be your financial partner. Capital Farm Credit has been around for nearly a century. We share the deep passion of the agricultural industry. We honor you and those who came before you, those who want to keep the legacy alive. Let us finance your legacy. CapitalFarmCredit.com.
This is Ben Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. Look at our website, ScottLandCompany.com and TexasCRP.com, to view many properties we have currently listed in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Give us a call at 800-933-9698 to discuss these properties in detail. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
USDA has increased the yield estimate for last season's U.S. soybean production, but slightly reduced harvested area.
The result is an increase in soybean production by about 10 million bushels this month. This, of course, is for the 2021-2022 crops. That's the crop that was harvested this past fall that is currently being marketed.
Mark Jackanowski chairs the World Ag Outlook Board.
So with that little increase in production for that crop, basically in our balance sheet, that's reflected almost entirely as an increase in ending stocks.
USDA raised its estimated season average market price for soybeans by 50 cents a bushel to $12.60.
Those prices, the season average farm price, it just goes to show how closely tied that is to the global supply and demand situation. And, you know, globally, stocks are tight and they're getting tighter, and that's supporting prices.
Soybean production in 2021 was up 5% from 2020. This is Stephanie Hope in Washington, D.C.